This is the October 13 edition of Commodity Week.
Todd Gleason's services are made available to WILL by University of Illinois Extension.
Welcome to Commodity Week. I am Todd Gleason. Our panelists today are Chip Nellinger of Blue Reef Agri-Marketing out of Morton, Illinois, Joe Vaklevic from Standard Grain. He's in Chicago, Illinois, and Mike Zuzulo is a global commodity analytics and consulting out of Atchison, Kansas. Our special guest for the day, John Bondurant of Bondurant Futures from Memphis, Tennessee. Commodity Week is a production of Illinois Public Media. You may find us online at willag.org. And while you're there, you can pick your tickets up for the Farm Assets Conference. That's the 22nd day of November in Normal, Illinois.
Support for agricultural programs comes from AgriGold, celebrating their 13th year as a major corporate underwriter of Illinois Public Media's ag programming and e-newsletter. AgriGold's support allows their customers and growers everywhere to receive quality ag information at no charge. More information on AgriGold can be found at AgriGold.com.
Let's begin with our usual question up front, which is to get a list of items to talk about. We'll start with you, Chip Nellinger of Blue Reef Agri-Marketing.
Well, I think first and foremost is this October report, and the reaction the market's had to this report has been a little choppy, and what that might mean going forward.
Joe Vaklevic?
I think the most pressing question here is, you know, what type of upside is really sustainable in these grain markets given these USDA numbers? The government essentially reinforced to us the idea of oversupplied markets, especially in corn and wheat. So what type of upside is possible? And will the farmer selling continue to cap the rally attempts?
Mike Zuzulo.
Yeah, I mean, I think we're kind of in a mindset, Todd, of having to figure out whether this is a trading range market to work down stocks like Joe's talking about, or whether we can maybe get some kind of a weather market germinated in the South American crop, and that allows us to maybe outperform market expectations and whether we're putting in a long-term low here.
And John Bondurant, have you got thoughts that we should go through today?
Well, I think we have funds have been big shorts in wheat and corn and really rolled up, and I guess also they've been short corn, long beans, but I'm not super optimistic on prices, particularly corn.
Let's start there. So how have the funds been working their way through this marketplace? You explained just a bit about it, but what do you think their role in the market today, not particularly this day, but in this fall might be, and where things go, John?
Well, I think the algos have really made the markets a lot more volatile because they really don't take fundamentals particularly into the equation, and they go with whatever their numbers tell them to go until it just gets overwhelmingly out of whack. And maybe we've gotten a little bit too far out of whack. I mean, I don't really want to be short grains at these price levels, but they do. And I just think they've caused a lot more volatility and a lot bigger moves every day than we're used to.
They have been doing that for some time back in the marketplace at this point. However, the market, I think, John, and maybe you will have a differing opinion at this point, usually will come back to the fundamental supply side or maybe some of the chart versions of the marketplace. Is it not doing that?
Oh, I think it does it, but it does it a lot more haphazardly than you think. I mean, how do you explain today particularly? I don't know of any fundamental news that was any different from yesterday.
Are there any good explanations for today, Mike Zuzulo?
I think probably the post-report, I think that's where maybe Chip was alluding to, and not to take any potential thunder from him, but the fact that it's happened after the report, the fact that we saw a significant purchase below market prices from Syria opened up the door that the Middle East is a train wreck when it comes to not having enough wheat in terms of supplying their people, and maybe a little bit of La Nina play. But I've always felt like wheat is the canary in the commodity coal mine, and if we break that long-term resistance line around 415, that is meaningful, especially given the fact that we're, you know, pricing in some Fed rate hikes in December. So I do think that we're, like John, I would not want to be short at these prices, especially if we close on Friday where we were on Thursday or better.
Okay, and just to make sure everybody understands which day of the week we are on, it's the 13th day of October, Thursday, so the market did rally fairly sharply on this day. Chip Nellinger, this is part of the reaction that you wanted to discuss as it came from USDA's report yesterday. Key reversals down on Wednesday on report day, and then nice rally that took all of the mount on Thursday.
Yeah, and I think it is the effect of the funds. And, you know, I don't disagree with what John said. The algos and computer-based, trading has made intraday swings more volatile. But by and large, they don't hold positions. So the fact of the matter today with the strong close, that's long-term trend-following macro-type funds getting out of short positions. And I think that's maybe a key change in here. We've seen it happen, you know, a half a dozen, maybe more like a dozen times in wheat where you see a strong day like this, and then 2 days later you're in new lows. So at some point, though, the funds have held a record short position in wheat for what seems like a year straight now. Eventually, just for no other reason than they want to put their money to work somewhere else and wheat has stopped going down, they're going to want to get out of these positions. And you may have seen, kind of the opening salvo of that in the corn and the bean market, or I should say corn and the wheat market. Today, but like Mike said, you got to see some follow through and a strong close tomorrow to close the week to get a little more confirmation.
Is this something that can be sustainable to the upside, do you think, Joe Vaclavec?
In the corn market, no, I don't. I don't think any big-time rally is going to be sustained here. I do think you could see a move in December corn up into the 350s, potentially the 360s. I think anything beyond that is going to be really difficult to do. You know, USDA didn't tell us anything new yesterday. We've been working with the idea of a 2.3 or 2.4 billion bushel new crop ending stocks figure for a long time now. So there's nothing new here. And I think we're going to be in a range-bound market. And with the range-bound market, it's false breakouts in a lot of situations. So you might see something to the upside here for a few days, maybe even a few weeks. But, you know, last year we were trading a 1.8 or 1.9 carryout all winter. We couldn't crack $4 on old crop corn. This year with the 2.3 carryout, I have a tough time believing we're going to be able to move much past 360 or 370.
Are we all satisfied that USDA has the corn crop dialed in correctly at 173.4, or is there more downside potential? And I don't know, maybe Mike Zuzulo, you can start.
I still think we're closer to 170, 171, Todd, based upon the anecdotal stuff that I'm getting, even from clients in Illinois. There's certainly that central Illinois area where Chip is at that is beating or matching 14 and 15 yields. But I would guess that about 60% of the rest of the state is not getting those 14, 15 yields in Illinois. I don't think you're getting them in Ohio at all. I don't think you're getting them by and large in Indiana at all. Illinois, we know a lot about. Indiana, we know a lot about. Iowa, Minnesota, we don't know a lot about because they just haven't gotten in the field yet because they've been so wet. But I'm still feeling fairly comfortable that we're closer to 170, 171 when it's all said and done.
Chip, Peoria, Tazewell County, as good as Mike is telling us?
Yes, maybe better. But I agree with Mike 100%. That's the minority. You know, you essentially cut Illinois into thirds and Interstate 74 and north, by far record yields on corn and beans both. However, that's the minority of the Corn Belt. So I guess I would agree with Mike that by that final January report, probably be down closer to 170. You know, and I agree with Joe as well. I think that it's a little bit different here. We have the demand on corn and beans cranked so high that now there's that bar to reach those. And it's taken a couple of years to get that demand ratcheted up. And so now the risk going forward is, especially with the rally, we cut into that demand and start ratcheting it back down. And that's just going to go to the bottom line on the carryout. So, I think you can see some upside, but probably in agreement with Joe that it's probably not a runaway market higher here unless something pops up in South America, and that's way down the road here.
John, I'm going to look to your wisdom on this one. You've been in this marketplace for a long time. We're at very low prices. That usually helps to create demand. Have we been low enough long enough to ensure that demand sticks around?
I'm not sure that we have. I think the biggest worry to me is world population growth is absolutely slowing, and the idea that we're going to have ever-growing consumption, I don't go for it. In fact, we've got, 79 countries in the world with negative population growth. So I'm not very happy about consumption. And As far as corn consumption goes, I think they're around 300 to 400 million bushels too high on feed usage. The animal numbers just don't support the USDA's very optimistic feed usage number. So I don't know. I'm just kind of neutral here. I have no hedges on forward, and it's probably the first time in 20 years I haven't had at least two crops hedged at once. But the prices are so horrible that, you know, you can have crop scares in South America and a lot of things can happen, can put the market up for a while. So I'm not particularly interested in hedging other than maybe December 17 corn.
Well, let me ask you a different question, John. Do you feel like, you know, these prices, and maybe they need to stay lower for a longer period of time, will take acreage out of production or hectares out of the production, one of the two, someplace?
Well, I don't know. They're probably going to lose 2 to 3 million acres of wheat in the U.S., and I think that's probably going to go into corn, beans, and cotton. So far, have you all seen any time period when low prices have really caused farmers not to farm? Historically, they just keep on planting. Maybe what we're experiencing now is that prices are so high that so much new technology came in the farm belt and at new acres were brought into production. I'm not sure they go out. I don't know how I feel about that.
Joe Vaklavic, can you give me your broad overview for corn and soybeans, maybe through the next, well, through the next 4 months? Let's get into the first part of next year.
Well, the big problem here is that the markets are oversupplied. And to go back to your last question, no, we're not going to see acreage taken out of rotation in any real meaningful way, not in the U.S., and we're going to continue to see expansion in South America. So the problem, you know, in a normal economy or economics would tell you that when you get a market like this, when we're below the cost of production, you're going to see, you know, production essentially decline, and we're just, we haven't seen that. The other problem is that we've had essentially 4 good years in a row here of good weather in the U.S. You know, 13, 14, 15, and 16 were okay. You know, we had decent weather. We didn't have any major crop errors. And really what we need here is a supply disruption for more than anything, whether it's something in South America, something here in the U.S., but I don't think we're going to get that supply disruption as a result of an acreage decrease. I think it's going to have to be a weather problem either here or in South America. For the next 3 or 4 months, I think the corn market's going to be very difficult to navigate. I think it's going to be range-bound. I think we're going to be similar to last year. I think we'll give you chances to sell rallies, but, you know, when the market starts to rally, especially on a day like today, you're going to start to get some bullish sentiment in the market, and we're going to be in for some false breakouts in both directions, I have a feeling. I think there's a better story in the soybean market, perhaps. What I see going on is that farmers are selling cash beans rather than cash corn. I think that similar to what we saw this past spring, I think the farmer's going to give up ownership of beans very, very quickly here. One, because beans pay the bills and they make some money. Two, I don't think anybody likes to store beans, and the carry just isn't as good as the corn market. So I think that opens things up for a rally in the bean market further on down the road. But I think the next 6 weeks or so could be difficult. But into early 2017, I wouldn't want to be too negative the bean market, knowing that the farmer here in the U.S. isn't going to be holding on to a ton.
Okay, Chip, I want to see if I can figure out a couple of things very quickly. So demand is good. USDA yesterday raised the export by, what, 50 million bushels on Wednesday for the October crop production, or for the October WASD figures. Is this all just front-end loaded?
I think in a lot of ways it is. A lot of the demand has been. China demand is just massive. And I agree with Joe. Here's what the potential problem is. The market action in the last 3 months to me and beans says that the market right now is a little more nervous about a potential South American production shortfall than a record crop here. And so if there's any little scare, any little blip or hint of a weather scare, you could see a nice rally in beans. But if there isn't a real production problem, and they have a big crop and they bounce back with a you know, a new record bean production down there, then come February, March, April, when they're putting beans on the market, we could have kind of a long hangover here. So I don't disagree with anything Joe said. I think this thing may be more back-end loaded because of what you said, Todd. The demand's front-end loaded, and we're worried about a potential problem that may never develop out of South America. I mean, that's my take on the last 3 months of the bean trade here. There's an underlying interest to buy every break in the bean market, including today.
So what do you want to do with your beans that have to go into commercial storage?
Oh, I agree 100%. I think there's no carry. There's relatively good basis in many areas. And I think you sell them and own them on paper, even if that's just a call option or call spread, playing, some sort of a potential weather scare into the winter time frame, December through February. That's about all you can do. It's producers just don't have a good feel or a good taste in their mouth storing beans just because of the shrink, if nothing else. But there's no carry in the market. Basis good. I think if you absolutely don't have room for them, kick them out of the field, own them on paper is the most cost effective way to do it.
Anybody disagree with that?
Nope, the basis has been terrific. In the 30 years I've been farming, I've never sold beans at 57 over for new crop, and I did, which is amazing. So why in the world would you want to hold them? And it makes all the sense in the world to sell them and own them some other way if you're bullish.
Hey, you said you weren't hedged up. Usually sometimes you're hedged up two crops. I think you said that.
two to three crops. I've been three crops at times.
And you often chimes when we talk to you in March, will have made late last-minute changes in your acreage, but are you considering acreage changes at this point for the coming year, and what would they be?
A whole lot less wheat. Going from 1,100 to zero. So that would be just a lot less wheat.
Mike Zuzalo, on corn, producers certainly don't have enough storage for the corn. It has to go across the scale. What are you telling them to do with it?
Start buying back at these price levels. If we see a breakout in the wheat like we saw on Thursday, hold, Todd. I think this is wheat and cattle to me, looking at monthly charts, looking at the supply-demand fundamentals would suggest to me, I think we're probably getting close to a 7-year low in fat cattle. And we may have to wait till early 17 for that, but I think we're also getting very close to a low that would last long enough in wheat until we know the crop is made in 17 for northern hemisphere. So coming in and buying back the March corn, trying to get it up to around 390 by November 15th is what I'm going after with clients right now. I think one thing that needs to maybe be developed a little bit more, and Chip, I think, brought it up with the South America, and Joe did too, but I think the world and the trading market would wake up quite a bit and break us out of this kind of trading range we're talking about. This heavy supply mindset and sentiment would go away very quickly if we had a decent weather market in South America, because when you look at the world corn ending stocks, and yeah, we do have very high demand. And John's 100% right, we're 458 million bushels more in feed and residual than we were last year. But we're still also, up around 80% year to date in export inspections when USDA says we're only going to be up 14%. So we're ahead of the curve for a change. And if the dollar stays weak, I think we could be ahead of the curve all the way into March because of South America. So that's kind of leading to my final point, is if we have a weather event in South America, not only does that tighten the supply up for South America, but it also extends our marketing year for demand in the United States. And world corn ending stocks are at 217 million roughly, about 7 million more than last year, and about 8 million more, 9 million more than 14-15. Plus or minus, but stocks to use ratios are actually lower than both 15-16 and 14-15. So I see corn as the best return on investment, not just because of what the guys were talking about with the good cash basis, but also because of the terrible in charges you're facing if you take corn to the elevator and store it. I just don't see a reason to pay that kind of in charge and would rather be back on the paper side and re-owning some, possibly as early as Friday afternoon, of what you've had to sell.
So you've painted on a day when the market has rallied fairly sharply. On a Thursday, corn was up 12 cents. A pretty bleak outlook. Are you all too bearish?
I hope so.
I think South American weather is a big deal. Surely we'll get one good weather scare out of South America, which will help beans in particular and corn to some extent. So we could certainly have a rally. Another thing, Todd, you talk about acreage. We may not have acreage go down, but we may have inputs per acre go down because farmers are in real pressure, a lot of pressure. There'll be a lot of bankruptcies.
I think one thing that we haven't talked about is the meal situation, Todd. I think that could be one of the best features to 2017. The world meal stocks at a little over 9.5 million tons, that's down 16% versus last year. And I think it's the lowest since 2013. One of the colleagues in Chicago pointed that out to me on the report day. And I've always enjoyed and liked meal-led rallies because they're usually the feed side and they're usually the stronger demand side and the nice steady climbs instead of bean oil where it's kind of food-related and crude oil-related. A meal-led rally would be very welcome right here. And I think that goes back to the point earlier John made about the corn and wheat short positions by the managed money. If we could get a meal rally technically started and they also see the all clear from the Federal Reserve and want to shift their assets over and cover those shorts in the feed grains, I think that gives you an opportunity to get back to at least break even on some of your 16 corn sales.
Is that supported by short supplies or continued short supplies of palm oil?
Yeah, I mean, I think that all works because that's where your La Nina did help us last year, or excuse me, your El Nino did help us last year, was in that arena. And, you know, that's something else that was brought up today by the CPC. They are seeing a 70% chance of a fall La Nina. And maybe 55% chance continuing into the winter. So that also kind of ignites some weather sentiment. It would be helpful too. But yeah, it would be supported by the palm and also the rapeseed.
Okay, I have one more topic to cover, and I almost hesitate to go here just because I'm feeling pretty bearish at the moment. USDA raised the soybean yield by 0.8 of a bushel. It's now at 51.4 bushels to the acre nationally. This crop, unlike the corn, where we've been getting a little lower each month, this crop has been getting bigger each month. Do we have another monthly increase in November, Chip Nellinger?
I think so, but I don't know that it matters. It's an old story at this point. I mean, we're deep enough into bean harvest and hearing these massive yields, and USDA went up, yesterday. I think that's the expectation, that they're going to move higher. But for all the reasons we talked about earlier, primarily the potential for a South American weather scare, I don't know that it matters. It might matter come April when South America's putting beans out on the world market, but I don't know that it matters right now.
Do you agree with that in Chicago, Joe?
I think we've probably already got a bigger yield price, Dan. I would guess that the market is probably trading something in the 52 to 52.5 bushel per acre range. I think yesterday's number was just kind of a placeholder for the time being, and I do believe the number goes higher.
All right, let's get a final word from each of you. I think, Joe Vaklevic, I will start with you. A final word for the day.
The situation here is still pretty negative. We've still got oversupplied markets. Nothing really changed here this week with the USDA report. If you do get some sort of upside breakout in the corn market, especially here, during the next couple of weeks, I do believe it will be a marketing opportunity. I know that there will just be so many bushels of corn that need to be priced that are going to be in storage, and I know everyone's going to want to wait for better opportunities. I just fear that those opportunities may not come. If you don't want to be a cash seller, don't be afraid to take a look at some put options, because the cost should be down if we can tack another 10 or 15 cents onto this thing.
Joe Vaklevic is with Standard Grain. He's out of Chicago, Illinois, near Peoria and Morton, Illinois. It's Chip Nellinger. He's with Blue Reef Agri-Marketing. Your final thoughts?
Yeah, I think that there's definitely rally potential ahead of us, but I think more than ever it's important to have a plan. Use the volatility that we're going to see to position yourself so that you're right either way. Make the sales and then defend it with options would be one way. There's multiple ways to do that, but you can't bet on the weather. We may not get a weather scare, and we have to reward the rallies when we see them.
Mike Zuzulo of Global Commodity Analytics and Consulting out of Atchison, Kansas.
I don't think the supply bear got fed on the report, Todd, and that's where we saw Thursday's rally come from, at the heart of it, along with some other things out of the Middle East. And the wheat to me is, again, the canary in the commodity coal mine. If we get a long-term low in wheat, I'm going to assume that's a long-term high in the dollar, at least for the next 6 months, and a short covering rally, fund-led short covering rally, I think is really good news. So I don't want to portray myself as too bearish. It's what gets us out of a trading range, and if you buy into the market, be ready to take your profit on the long side very quickly. I think the demand bull is alive and well in the grain markets, but he's not going to come out much because he knows between the Fed in December and the U.S. election in November, it's kind of hunting season. And so he's going to not stick his head out too much, probably feel better as we get another month, month and a half down the road, and we see if South America can't bring something around as far as true weather problems.
And finally, John Bondurant from Bondurant Futures out of Memphis, Tennessee. Your thoughts?
Well, as a farmer, the only thing I see out here that attracts me at all is December 17 corn at close to $4. It looks like you can make a little money. So I would advise that. I'm not super optimistic on anything. I'm also fearful that we're making a yield breakout in beans. You know, corn's been trending up on yields for years, and beans hadn't done much of anything. And I wonder if maybe we finally are making a breakout on bean yields. But I think South America is going to give us a better chance to do something.
Commodity Week is a production of Illinois Public Media. You can always find us online at WILLAG.org. You can hear the whole of our program there. Our thanks again to our panelists today, including John Bondurant of Bondurant Futures out of Memphis, Tennessee, Mike Zuzulo from Global Commodity Analytics and Consulting out of Atchison, Kansas, Joe Vaklevic of Standard Grain in Chicago, Illinois, and Chip Nellinger from Blue Reef Agri Marketing in Morton, Illinois. I'm your host, University of Illinois Extension's Todd Gleason.
Support for agricultural programs comes from AgriGold, celebrating their 13th year as a major corporate underwriter of Illinois Public Media's ag programming and e-newsletter. AgriGold's support allows their customers and growers everywhere to receive quality ag information at no charge. More information on AgriGold can be found at agrigold.com.